Welcome to the Deep Dive, where we extract the most important nuggets of knowledge from a stack of sources custom-tailored for you. And today, we're diving into something really foundational to how we connect: communication. It's kind of wild to think that, you know, maybe as much as 90% of what we communicate isn't even spoken. That's right, your coworkers definitely saw your eye roll during that last Zoom call. Our mission today isn't just about telling you what nonverbal cues and smart visuals are. It's really to unpack why they can either, you know, rocket your message to success or will totally sabotage your credibility. We want to help you interpret that silent language, design visuals that genuinely grab attention, and maybe stop your face from accidentally betraying your thoughts. Imagine you're Alex, okay? You've got this crucial presentation, maybe landing a new client, pitching a big idea. Every insight today is designed to give Alex and you that edge. So we'll cover 5 key areas in this deep dive. First, deciphering body language, faces, gestures, all that. Then we'll get into the influence of space, appearance, your overall presence.
After that, tackling visual aids charts, graphs, how to make them impactful. Then we'll hit slide design, visual storytelling, the art of it. And finally, maybe the most dynamic part, adapting all this non-verbally, you know, in real time based on who you're talking to and where you are. Okay, let's get into it.
It's fascinating, isn't it? That first stat, the 90%. It really hammers home how much is happening under the surface. You know, you're in a meeting, someone says, oh yeah, I completely agree with that plan.
Right.
But their arms are folded tight. Maybe their eyes are kind of darting around. There's that little furrow in their brow.
You see that disconnect.
Exactly. The words say one thing, but the body, it's telling a different story, often a truer story. This whole field, kinesics, it reveals so much: emotions, intentions, even confidence or lack of it.
And it's not just a feeling, right? Research keeps showing this, like 70 to 90% figure for nonverbal communication.
That's right.
Your tone, how you stand, those small gestures, the look on your face, even how you use eye contact.
Mm.
They all send signals that totally shape how your message lands. If people trust it, if they even remember it.
And think about Alex's pitch again. Mastering this stuff, it's not just about being a slick speaker. It really empowers you. You reinforce your words with conviction. You get better at reading others' true feelings. You project real confidence, seem more approachable, and you can just navigate conversations much more effectively. It's like building rapport without even saying a word sometimes.
So let's dig into the specifics then.
Right.
What are these core nonverbal things we need to get a handle on? First up, posture.
Posture, yeah, that's one of those instant giveaways, isn't it?
Totally.
It immediately signals confidence or maybe disinterest. Attentiveness. Think about it evolutionarily. Standing tall, open. That signals strength, right? Openness.
We're into slouching.
Slouching, crossed arms. That can feel like vulnerability or defensiveness. Our brains just pick up on these signals subconsciously.
So for Alex pitching, if they're slouched, arms crossed, the client might subconsciously think, they're unsure or they're kind of closed off.
Exactly. But an upright posture, shoulders back, arms open, maybe leaning in just a bit, that screams confidence, openness, engagement. So the simple advice here is literally straighten up, sit or stand tall, shoulders back, keep your arms uncrossed, lean slightly towards them. It's an immediate, powerful signal of professionalism and being receptive.
Okay, and then their facial expressions. Our faces can be such traitors sometimes, can't they?
They absolutely can. They're incredibly powerful ways we show emotion. You know, genuine smiles, the ones that make your eyes crinkle, a Duchenne smile.
Right.
They signal real warmth, friendliness. But a subtle frown, narrowed eyes. Even if someone's saying it's fine, that expression hints at discomfort, maybe disagreement.
And those tiny flashes, too. Micro expressions.
Yes, micro expressions. Those fleeting looks that reveal true feelings, often before we even realize it ourselves.
Hmm.
So for Alex, the goal is authentic smiles, making sure the expression fits the message, looking relaxed, using cues appropriately, like raising eyebrows for surprise or interest. It just makes sure Alex's face is helping the message, not fighting it.
Now, gestures. I admit, I talk with my hands a bit. So how do we make sure gestures help, not, you know, distract, especially if you're passionate?
That's a great point. Gestures are fantastic. They add energy. They emphasize points. But yeah, overdoing it, that can become distracting. A nervous tick, even.
Right.
The key is being intentional. Using open palms, for instance, that tends to signal sincerity, honesty. And you can use gestures to literally count up points or show scale.
Okay.
The big thing is to avoid, like, excessive fidgeting or repetitive movements that just pull focus away from what you're saying. Alex could use a big open gesture for huge opportunity or a more precise hand movement for key details. It adds meaning.
And the last piece here, eye contact. This feels so direct, like looking into someone's intention.
It really is potent. Eye contact is a huge indicator of confidence, engagement, honesty, trustworthiness. If Alex avoids looking the client in the eye during the pitch, well, the client might subconsciously feel like Alex is uncomfortable, maybe even dishonest, no matter how good the words are.
So what's the right amount?
The tip is just natural, comfortable eye contact, enough to show you're engaged, connected. But not so much feels like staring, which is uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And crucially, always think about cultural norms. Some cultures prefer less direct eye contact, showing you know that. That conveys huge respect.
Okay, so we have these pieces, posture, face, gestures, eyes. They're all important. But what happens when they don't match up? Which I think is where things often go wrong. Body says one thing, words say another.
Ah, yes, this brings up alignment. The most powerful, the most trustworthy communication happens when your words and your nonverbals are all saying the same thing. Consistently.
Okay.
When they don't align. That creates mixed messages. It confuses people. It chips away at trust. It just dilutes your impact. Imagine Alex saying, I am totally confident about this solution, but they're looking away, fidgeting with a pen.
Right. You don't believe it.
Exactly. That inconsistency screams uncertainty. Now picture Alex saying, I'm confident in this solution, looking right at them, calm voice, open gestures.
Much better.
That alignment. That ensures the message is trusted, it's received the way it's intended. It's about building that consistent, credible presence.
And it's not just about what we're sending out, is it? It's just as important to be able to read the signals coming back from others. It's a two-way thing.
Precisely. Truly effective communicators. They're not just managing their own show. They are constantly observing others. So, as Alex is pitching, they should be scanning the room, looking for facial expressions, confusion, interest.
Nodding, maybe.
Nodding for agreement, yeah. Or maybe posture that looks open or defensive, crossed arms signaling uncertainty, eye contact, are they engaged or looking away? Reading these subtle cues lets Alex adjust on the fly.
How so?
Well, maybe slow down if people look confused, clarify a point, or maybe inject a bit more energy if attention seems to be wandering.
Okay, let's make this really concrete.
Yeah.
Alex is presenting to that client. What does this look like in action?
Right. Alex starts with confident posture, open stance, a genuine, relaxed smile to convey enthusiasm, using meaningful hand gestures, maybe, to emphasize key benefits, making steady eye contact, connecting with different people around the table.
So the words are saying exciting opportunity, solid plan, and the body language is reinforcing that.
Exactly. Consistent alignment. But crucially, Alex is also noticing things, like maybe one client nods in agreement at a key point. Great. Or maybe another client furrows their brow looking a bit lost.
Ah.
That's the cue for Alex to pause. Maybe say something like, does that part make sense? Or would it be helpful if I clarified that bit?
So it's proactive reading and reacting.
That's the essence of it. Confident, effective, nonverbal communication that reinforces your message and genuinely engages your audience because you're responding to them.
We've covered our own body language pretty well. But what about the other stuff? The environment, how we look, our general presence?
Hmm. Yeah, these factors are fascinating because they send messages before you even open your mouth.
Hmm.
They can powerfully project confidence, professionalism, approachability. Think about it. If Alex walks into a meeting room that's cramped and messy, or shows up in a Hawaiian shirt to what turns out to be a really formal client meeting.
Oops. Yeah.
It's not just a minor slip up. These things subtly, but sometimes dramatically, shape how the message is received, how Alex is perceived.
Let's start with personal space. We all have that invisible bubble, right? What's the deal with that?
We absolutely do. It's a whole field called proxemics. It's that comfort zone around us, and it varies a lot based on culture and relationship. Get too close, you make people uncomfortable. Stay too far, you might seem aloof.
So what are the zones?
Generally, we talk about four. The intimate zone, like 0 to 18 inches. That's for close relationships. Pretty much avoid this professionally.
Yeah.
Then the personal zone, maybe 18 inches to 4 feet. This is usually ideal for most one-on-one conversations. Friendly, but not intrusive. The social zone, 4 to 12 feet. That's good for group chats, meetings, comfortable engagement. And the public zone, over 12 feet. Think presentations, public speaking. A wider distance feels natural there.
So for Alex, knowing this is key.
Definitely. In a one-on-one project chat, staying in that personal zone, maybe 2-4 feet, feels engaged and respectful in a big team meeting. Using that social zone lets Alex connect with the whole group comfortably.
It makes total sense that the actual physical place where you communicate matters too. We're not just floating in space.
Absolutely not. The environment itself, it hugely impacts comfort, how authority is perceived, professionalism. A cramped room can make people feel defensive. A huge empty room can feel isolating.
So what's the actionable tip?
Be intentional about the space. For small collaborative groups, maybe choose a cozy room, a round table to foster equality. For a formal presentation, pick a room with good visibility, minimal clutter, and always, always try to minimize distractions. Like if Alex needs to give sensitive feedback, a private, comfortable, small conference room is way better than a busy open office. It just fosters more openness and trust. You're setting the stage.
And then appearance, the old dress for the job you want idea. But it sounds like it's more nuanced than just suit or no suit.
It really is about appropriate intentionality. How you look powerfully influences perceptions. Mm-hmm. Professional, approachable, trustworthy, creative. It's not always about being the most formal person in the room. It's about aligning your look with the context and with your message.
An example.
Sure. Formal client meetings. Usually, business attire signals seriousness, competence, casual team brainstorming. Business casual, maybe smart casual, can feel more creative, approachable. So Alex dressing professionally for that client pitch, it's not just vanity. It signals respect for the client, confidence in the proposal.
Right.
But if it's an internal creative jam session, smart casual might actually encourage more open, imaginative thinking.
That's a really good point. It's not rigid, it's strategic.
Yeah.
Now, what about projecting professional presence? What does that actually mean for someone like Alex?
Presence. It's sort of how you carry yourself. It powerfully shapes how people see your confidence, your authority, even your composure under pressure. It's that sense of like being in command of yourself.
Okay, how do you project that?
Well, maintain confident posture, like we discussed. Engage with steady, appropriate eye contact. Speak calmly, confidently, and consciously avoid those nervous habits, like fidgeting. Crucially, it means keeping your cool, even when things get tough.
Like in a Q&A.
Exactly. If Alex faces tough questions after the pitch, staying calm, giving direct, thoughtful answers, not getting defensive with body language, that reassures people. It builds massive credibility. It's projecting that inner stillness.
This brings up a really important point, especially today. What if Alex is dealing with different cultures? Do these rules change?
That is absolutely vital to consider. Different cultures, even different contexts within a culture, have vastly different expectations. Personal space, eye contact, gestures, even what's considered appropriate attire. What's normal or expected in one place might be seriously off-putting somewhere else.
So how do you navigate that?
Adapting shows huge sensitivity and respect. The tip is, do your homework. Research cultural norms before you interact. Observe subtly, maybe mirror local standards where it feels natural, and always, always be respectful and open to learning. For Alex meeting international clients, taking the time to research their culture's preferences for greetings, personal space, dress code, that shows immense respect. It can make or break that first impression.
So putting it all together for Alex's big meeting, it's not just the presentation deck.
Not at all.
It's choosing a professional room, dressing appropriately, walking in confidently with good eye contact, a real smile. And having done that background research on cultural norms for greetings and body language, it conveys respect, builds rapport instantly. It's the whole package.
Mm.
Okay, next up, let's tackle something that can be your best friend or your worst nightmare.
Visual aids. We've all been there, right? Staring at slides crammed with so many numbers and charts, they look like, I don't know, secret CIA code.
Oh, yeah.
Your eyes just glaze over. The point gets totally lost. It's death by PowerPoint, visually.
It's a common pain point, but it really doesn't have to be that way.
Uh-huh.
What's really cool is how our brains work with visuals. There's this thing called the picture superiority effect.
Uh-huh.
Basically, we remember information presented visually way better than just text.
Yeah, we process visuals much, much faster than text alone. So used right, visuals aren't just decoration. They are powerful tools. They clarify your message. They engage people on a different level. They make information genuinely stick. They actually reduce cognitive load, make it easier for the brain to grasp your point.
Okay, so where do we begin? How do you pick the right visual? Because like the source said, you can't just throw everything into a pie chart, especially one with like 12 slices.
Exactly. Not all data works the same way, and neither do visuals. Choosing the wrong one can actually make things less clear. So bar charts, they're great for comparing distinct things, like quarterly sales figures side by side, or maybe performance across different teams.
Okay.
Line graphs are perfect for showing trends over time. Think annual revenue growth, website traffic going up or down, stock prices. They really highlight change.
Makes sense.
Pie charts, they're best for showing parts of a whole. Proportions.
Yeah.
But, and this is key only if you keep it simple, like 3 to 5 slices max, any more and nobody can read it. And infographics are fantastic for summarizing complex ideas or processes visually. They break down complicated stuff into digestible, nice-looking chunks.
So if Alex wants to show the client which sales quarter was strongest,
a simple, clean bar chart would do that instantly. Bam. Strongest quarter is obvious.
Okay. Got the right visual. Step 2 seems obvious, but hard. Keep it simple. It's so tempting to just dump all the data in there.
And that's the trap. That's when you overwhelm people, increase that cognitive load. Clutter just confuses.
Yeah.
Remember, visuals should clarify, not complicate. So limit your data points. Only show what's essential. Avoid crowded charts. Focus on emphasizing just the one key message you want that visual to convey.
So for Alex's pitch, instead of every single monthly sales number for 5 years.
All right, just summarize. Use quarterly totals or yearly totals. It's about distilling it down for maximum impact.
How about color? I've seen slides that look like a rainbow exploded and others that are just beige.
Huh. Yeah, less explosion, more strategy. Color's great. It grabs attention, helps organize data, but too many colors. Visual noise, it distracts.
So what's the rule of thumb?
Stick to maybe 2 to 4 distinct colors, ones that work well together, maybe match your brand. Then use a bolder or contrasting color specifically to emphasize your main point, the thing you really want them to see first. And always, always make sure there's good contrast between text and background so people can actually read it easily.
Yeah.
So if Alex is showing sales data, maybe use neutral colors for most bars, but a bright, distinct color for that top performing quarter, the eye goes right there.
My personal nightmare. Unlabeled visuals. It's like, here's a graph. Good luck figuring it out.
You're right. That is incredibly frustrating for an audience. So rule 4, label everything clearly. That means clear descriptive titles that tell the story. What is this visual showing? Labels on all your axes, X and Y, keep them simple and clear. And if you have multiple data sets, use a concise legend.
So a line graph titled monthly website traffic growth with clear labels for months and visitors.
Makes all the difference. Instant context.
And finally, even with the perfect visual, you still need to explain it briefly, don't you? You can't just point at it.
Absolutely. Never assume everyone gets it immediately, even if it seems clear to you. Always take a moment to verbally summarize the main takeaway. Tell them what they should be seeing. Highlight why this visual matters in your larger story. And clarify anything that might be confusing.
So Alex shows the sales chart and says
something like, so, as you can see from this bar chart, Q3 really outperformed the others significantly. Sales nearly doubled compared to Q2. This really shows the impact of that new marketing push. You connect the visual data back to the narrative.
Got it. So the checklist for Alex, right? Visual for the data, keep it simple, use color smartly, label clearly, and plan a quick verbal explanation. That makes sense. Okay, now let's shift to slide design and visual storytelling. Slides.
Yeah, they can be a double-edged sword, can't they?
Totally.
They're either those mind-numbing walls of text, you know, death by PowerPoint, or they're crisp, engaging guides that actually help your message. That's the perfect way to put it. And the goal is definitely not to create a teleprompter for yourself on the screen. Good slides should complement what you're saying. They shouldn't compete with you for attention.
Right.
They clarify key points. They reinforce your message visually. And crucially, they help your audience actually picture and remember your story long after you're done. It's really about designing for understanding and memory.
So how do we make slides work for us, not against us? Where do we start?
First principle, again, keep slides simple and clean. Think back to that cognitive load idea. A slide jammed with text or too many images just overwhelms people. The mantra really is less is more. Aim for just one clear idea, one central message per slide.
Okay, one idea per slide. How does that look practically?
It means limiting text. Short, punchy headlines, concise bullet points, think keywords or short phrases, not full sentences, and make sure there's plenty of white space, empty space. It helps the important stuff stand out, makes it feel less cluttered, more professional.
I've heard about Guy Kawasaki's 10-20-30 rule. Can you break that down again? Why is it so effective?
Yeah, it's a great guideline, really practical. It stands for 10 slides maximum.
10, okay.
It keeps it focused, prevents you from just rambling on with too much info. 20 minutes maximum for the presentation itself.
Respects people's time.
Exactly. Keeps it concise. And 30-point font minimum.
30-point. That sounds huge.
It forces you to be concise. It ensures people on the back can actually read it. It pushes you away from using slides as speaker notes. It's designed to force clarity and maximize impact.
And speaking of text, how do we use it strategically? Because like you said, the slide isn't your script.
Exactly. Your slides should support your spoken words, not just repeat them. Think of them as visual signposts or anchors. Use headlines that clearly summarize the slide's main point. Like, instead of just Q4 results, maybe sales increased 20% in Q4. Much clearer.
Okay.
And use short, digestible bullet points for the main ideas. But definitely avoid long sentences or paragraphs. If it's all text up there, you're making the audience choose between reading and listening to you.
They'll probably read and tune you out.
Often, yeah. Or just get frustrated.
So visuals are key on slides, too. How do we choose effective visuals for slides and use them to tell that story?
Right. This is the visual storytelling part. Well-chosen images, good graphs, charts, even simple icons. They convey complex ideas way faster and more effectively than just words. So for Alex, maybe using a powerful image to evoke an emotion related to the problem they're solving.
Okay.
Using that clear bar chart for the sales data we talked about. Or maybe using simple icons to represent steps in a process. The goal is to make a complex point instantly graspable at a glance. The audience gets the gist visually, then they can listen to you elaborate.
Consistency seems important, too. You don't want slides looking like they came from 5 different presentations.
Oh, absolutely. Consistency is key. A consistent look and feel, fonts, colors, layout, it screams professionalism. Attention to detail. Plus, it just makes the information clearer and easier to follow.
So, practical tips.
Maintain the same fonts for titles and text throughout. Stick to a limited professional color scheme, usually 2 to 4 colors, maybe tied to your brand. And be consistent with alignment, spacing, how you lay out elements on the slide. It creates a smooth, polished experience.
And finally, how do we weave this all together to tell a clear visual story? It's not just a random collection of slides.
Exactly. This is where it becomes more of an art. You need to structure your slides logically. Think beginning, middle, end. Like any good story, your intro slide sets the stage. Here's the topic. Here's the main point or question. Your middle slides, that's where you present the evidence, the data, the examples, the stories, building your case step by step. And your conclusion slide, it wraps things up. A clear summary, maybe a powerful call to action. What do you want them to do now?
Okay.
This framework creates a narrative flow. It makes the whole presentation feel cohesive, persuasive, and much more memorable.
So for Alex's sales growth presentation, slide 1 might be a bold title, Q4 sales results, surpassing expectations. Slide 2, that clear bar chart, quarterly sales comparison, showing the Q4 peak.
Yep.
Slide 3, maybe key bullet points. Mm-hmm. 20% growth versus Q3, top performer, widget X.
Concise.
And the final slide, action steps, expand widget X marketing next quarter.
Perfect. Each slide builds on the last. It's a clear, compelling visual story.
Yeah.
Memorable and actionable.
Okay, now for our final segment. This feels like the most alive part. The dynamic dance of communication, adapting nonverbal cues to your audience and environment in real time. You know, picture Alex halfway through that big pitch, tells a joke, silence, crickets, then notices people glancing at their phones.
Yeah, that sinking feeling.
It feels like a communication emergency. It shows that planning is great, but you have to be able to react, right?
It's so true. And the exciting part is Alex can fix it in that moment. Successful communication. It's fundamentally interactive. A two-way street. It's all about reading that nonverbal feedback from the audience, tuning into the physical environment, and then adjusting your own nonverbal signals immediately. When you get good at this real-time adaptation, you can actually turn a drifting audience back into an engaging one. It shows real presence, real empathy.
So step 1 has to be reading the audience clearly. They're always sending signals, even if they're silent.
Exactly. Audiences are constantly giving feedback. Facial expressions, posture shifts, eye contact, just their general energy level. Your first job is to be a really active observer.
What are the signs of engagement we should look for?
Usually things like leaning forward, maybe smiling or nodding along, consistent eye contact, even taking notes.
And the warning signs. Disengagement or confusion.
Yeah, things like glancing at phones or watches, definitely. Crossed arms can be a sign, confused looks, furrowed brows, or those little side conversations starting up. When Alex spots those signs, that's the immediate cue. Don't wait until the Q&A. Adapt right then.
So if they are disengaged, what's step two? How do we adjust our own body language to pull them back in?
Well, audiences often mirror your energy, whether they mean to or not. If you seem low energy or disconnected, they probably will too. So to re-engage, you might physically move closer, if appropriate, or change your position in the room to feel more connected. Crucially, visibly dial up your authentic energy and enthusiasm. Passion is contagious.
Okay.
Use more open, inviting gestures. Re-establish that strong, steady eye contact with different individuals. If Alex sees focus drifting, maybe stepping out from behind a podium, using broader gestures, projecting more enthusiasm, that can literally snap attention back.
What about our voice? Does tone and pace play a role in adapting?
Oh, massively. Your voice, the tone, the speed hugely impacts attention and how well people understand you. Rushing through complex stuff can just leave people confused, but going too slow can bore them.
So you adjust based on their feedback.
Exactly. If the nonverbal cues suggest confusion, slow down. Give them more time to process. Maybe rephrase. If energy seems low, maybe pick up the pace just slightly. Inject some momentum. And definitely vary your pitch. Use your voice to emphasize key points. Avoid that monotone drone.
So if Alex sees confused faces,
pause. Slow down. Maybe say, let me explain that point another way and try a different approach. It shows you're paying attention to them.
And the physical space itself, the environmental factors, you mentioned those matter too.
They absolutely do. And a smart communicator factors them in. How effective your nonverbals are can be affected by room size, audience size, how people are seated, even outside distractions.
How do you adapt?
In a really big room, Alex might need to project their voice more, use larger, more deliberate gestures so everyone can see and feel the energy. In a smaller, intimate setting, a quieter voice, subtler gestures feel more appropriate, less overwhelming. And if there are distractions you can't control, like sudden noise, acknowledge it briefly. Oh, okay, let's just pause for a second till that passes. It shows you're aware and in control, not flustered. It's about fitting your delivery to the specific space.
Finally, how can we proactively invite and respond to audience interaction to keep things lively?
Interaction isn't just for the end Q&A. It's a powerful tool throughout to gauge understanding and boost engagement. So proactively pause. Ask open-ended questions. What are your initial thoughts on this? Or does anyone have experience with this particular challenge?
Or simple prompts.
Yeah, simple prompts work great too. Raise your hand if, or give me a quick nod if this makes sense.
Yeah.
And this is vital to adapt based on how they respond.
How so?
If you get blank stares, maybe simplify the question or rephrase it. If you get lots of nods or raised hands, great. Build on that enthusiasm. Maybe share a related story or invite someone to share their thought briefly. So if Alex asks, who here has faced this issue and sees lots of nodding, Alex can say, okay, great. So you know what I'm talking about. Let me share a quick story about how we tackled that. It makes it a dialogue.
So for Alex, that dynamic checklist for adapting on the fly is keep observing the audience. Be ready to tweak your body language, your voice, adapt to the room itself, and actively invite interaction and respond skillfully. It's very fluid.
Exactly. It's a continuous loop of observing, interpreting, and adjusting.
So wrapping this all up, what does this mean for you listening? We've just unpacked a really powerful toolkit for nonverbal and visual communication. First, we dug into kinesics, mastering body language, facial expressions, gestures for more confidence, more clarity.
Mm.
Then we explored proxemics, understanding how personal space, appearance, your overall presence, project professionalism, and trust.
Mm.
We covered designing and using visual aids that actually help, simplifying complex info, using ideas like the picture superiority effect, managing cognitive load.
Yeah, making them work for you.
Followed best practices for slide design. Visual storytelling, making things engaging and memorable.
Key skills.
And finally, we learned about that dynamic dance, adapting all your nonverbal cues in real time based on audience feedback in the environment just to maintain that impact.
And looking at the big picture here, these skills, they really aren't just, you know, nice to haves. They are absolutely essential, especially for someone like Alex facing that critical pitch. Think about it. Clear, aligned, nonverbal cues. They build trust and credibility before you even say much.
Right.
Clear visuals, they cut through complexity, make your message stick. And that ability to adapt in real time, it shows you're agile, you're empathetic, it ensures your communication actually connects. Honestly, mastering these subtle but profound skills, it significantly boosts your confidence, your professionalism, and just your overall success in communicating.
So, considering everything we've unpacked today about this silent language of influence, here's something to think about. What's one specific nonverbal cue you'll intentionally adjust in your very next important conversation or presentation to instantly shift its impact?